This is LifeMint.com and you're listening to the Mint Editors Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. Today's breaking story is, of course, that Vishal Sikka of Infosys has resigned as CEO. They have an interim CEO in place. And according to our stories, he's blaming Narayan Murthy and a lot of personal attacks, which he calls baseless and malicious.
That's right. I mean, it's we had a story this morning, which we worked on yesterday, which cited a letter that Mr. Murthy wrote to a few of his advisors.
Right.
Where he said three Infosys directors, including co-chairman Ravi Venkatesan, had said that Vishal Sikka was just resigned as CEO and who's been made executive vice chairman, and we'll come to that in a bit. It's a good chief technology officer material, but not good CEO material. The company didn't respond to this yesterday, although, of course, they denied all the allegations that Mr. Murthy was making about various other issues. And in the story that we wrote, we pointed out that this sort of puts a cloud over Vishal Sikka's continuation as CEO, because some of the directors have this feeling.
Right.
But I don't think that was the trigger. I don't think Murthy's letter must have been that, because this has been brewing for some time. It's not one of those things that's happened overnight. And I think this is one of those instances where you really need to step back and you look at what has happened. I think this is a succession, and I know to call it a succession 3 years after a CEO has taken over is a little strange, but I think it's one of those successions that's gone horribly wrong.
True.
Right? There is no reason why things should have come to such a pass. And I think there are lots of people who have to own up responsibility as to why these things came to pass. And I know that everyone would like to blame someone else, but I think you'll have to look at what happened. And I think at one level, Mr. Murthy, the co-founder of Infosys, is to blame. Right, because I think he has continuously complained and raised issues about what's happening at Infosys. And the company says as much, right? I mean, if you look at one of the letters, because the company has been extremely active this morning, but if you look at one of the letters that's been released to the media and also to the stock exchanges by the company, it accuses Murthy of malicious personal attacks and cites that as the reason for the CEO stepping down. Vishal Sikka himself in his personal blog post says pretty much the same thing, and he said enough was enough and that he found it was highly distracting.
Right.
So you have Mr. Murthy, and I think these are things he's done which maybe could have been done differently, or maybe some of them needn't have been done. But let's look at the issues that he raised, right? I mean, because if someone's raising issues, you have to look at them. And I'd like to categorize them under two heads, right? One is the petty issues and one is the not so petty issues. And then the petty issues we shouldn't even talk about, right? I mean, because some of these have been written about, some of these have not been written about. I don't think you and I should be discussing whether someone stays in a suite or in a room. We shouldn't be discussing whether someone flies commercial or flies charter. Those are all, and how much people get paid. Move that aside,
right?
I mean, if someone has an issue with salaries, people have an issue with salaries. So it's, just move that aside. So I would categorize all of them as the petty issues. I want to look at the not-so-petty issues. And the not-so-petty issues are issues he raises where he says the board has not addressed some of the questions that various people have raised over the past year and a half, including whistleblower complaints to the stock market regulator about irregularities in an acquisition that Infosys made. There has always been this imputation that the more than generous severance offer that was given to the former CFO, Rajiv Bansal, was actually some sort of hush money because he initially opposed the deal and then signed off on the deal, and then they didn't want him to disclose details. Now, to be fair to the company has conducted 4 investigations on this, it says, all by reputed agencies and entities. It's given the names of them, law firms, accounting firms, it's valuation agencies, all of that. And the board has seen the results and said, no wrongdoing, everything is fine. Mr. Murthy wants those reports to be made public, which actually Mint also asked for some time back, because he says Infosys has always stood for the highest standards of governance. It's not done so. I think it should be brought forward. He also says, I have no, as he says in the letter yesterday, which we've quoted in Mint, I don't really have a problem with Vishal Sikka. My larger problem is with the board because they haven't addressed a lot of these issues. So that's that. I would completely disregard the not-so-petty issues. I mean, the petty issues, the not-so-petty issues, the issues related to governance and other things. I think he's got a bit of a point. I personally think that the board of Infosys has been a little dysfunctional. It's not done everything that it could have done to avoid a situation like this emerging. For instance, is Mr. Murthy lying when he says three directors, including Ravi Venkatesan, told him that Sikka was CTO material and not CEO material? I don't know, right? I don't think Mr. Murthy, I've known him for some time. Of course, as a journalist, you can never take anything for granted. But is he going to lie in an email like this? I don't know, right? The company has, of course, denied it. And it said, like, everything is fine.
Yeah.
It's hunky-dory between the board and the CEO. But I think there was this little bit of dysfunctionality. So sure, a promoter who's scribbling about things big and small could have done it in a different way, could have been more constructive. So yes, part of the blame with Mr. Murthy.
Yeah, he couldn't let go. I mean,
and couldn't let go.
Yeah.
And of course, people also say that it's because his post-retirement career hasn't been as great as his pre-retirement career. That's debatable.
Mm.
I don't want to go in there. But I still think that he should have let go.
Yeah.
And some of the other promoters have let go a little more easily than he has. Yes, thank you. Right, so I think Mr. Murthy is partly to blame, although some of the issues he raises are fine. I think the board is partly to blame, although in defense of the board, some of the things that it has said today about Mr. Murthy are perfectly accurate. He shouldn't have done a lot of things that he did, all that. Now, as for Sikka himself, I don't know the man, but our reporters have been covering him fairly aggressively. I'm not sure. I used to cover Infosys at one point in time, right? So, and I know the culture of the company, or at least used to know the culture of the company till some time back. I have no idea what the culture of the company is now. So, for instance, when I first heard that Infosys was making big acquisitions, and then the first big play that they made was when Chris Gopalkrishnan was the CEO, when they tried to bid for Axon, which was a UK company, and then finally HCL got it and all that. Infosys almost got it, and then I think when they didn't get it, I think a collective sigh of relief went up everywhere, because I don't think this is a company that is made for acquisitions. Right. Back when I was a reporter, the very first acquisition that Infosys made was a company called Expert Infosystems, I think, which was in Australia. Small acquisition, very small acquisition. I don't think it went well. I think the integration was a nightmare. Right. So the cultures are very different. So I'm not perfectly convinced that everything that happened since Vishal Sikka took over in terms of acquisitions and everything else was right, which is all right. I mean, if you're a CEO, you don't need to get everything right. And he was trying to transform the company. We'll come to that in a bit. But I also think that when you want to run a company like Infosys, which is culturally a very different company, all that, you have to be here. And I think there was an issue that he wasn't here.
Physically, you mean?
Right, obviously. Yeah, it is. And you know, I know a lot of people will say that, you know, high tech, high touch, telecommute, you can do all these things and all that. I personally think it's not possible. It's not possible for a small company. It's also not possible for a big company. Right? I mean, the CEO has to be there at the headquarters. The number two can be elsewhere.
Right,
but I think it makes sense for the CEO to be there at the headquarters, to spend a lot of time at the headquarters, to really get into the culture of the company, especially if you're an outsider.
Right.
The new CEO of GE, for instance, cannot afford to sit somewhere else, right? I mean, he has to be there in the company's new Boston headquarters, right? He can't say, I'll work out of Palo Alto. So I'm not sure that Vishal Sikka also did everything right. So all three of them, issues. Now, of course, the argument will be about who messed up more. What are the bigger issues, right? Tough to say. I mean, were there really governance issues? The board has said something. I'd like to take them at face value. They've said we've conducted our investigations and we've found nothing wrong.
Right.
But Murthy says then make the reports public. Board says no. So I don't know what to think about these things. But they'll have to put all this behind them, right? Now, what has this episode done? This episode has clearly showed that you need a CEO who's here, all that. But at the end of the day, it also shows the transformation challenge for companies like Infosys. Infosys is a classic IT services company, works in a certain way, typically application development and maintenance, outsourcing of work and everything else. And then suddenly you have a technological shift. You have to move into automation. You have to move into AI. You have to start looking at nonlinear growth, which means growth which is not dependent on growth in number of employees. Are Indian companies equipped to do this? Can they do that? What is the technological and the strategic challenge? And to give him credit, I think Vishal Sikka got a lot of this, right? If you read his interviews over a period of time, I think he understood the technological transformation that needed to happen. Let me also say this, I think he got this a lot better than the heads of TCS or the heads of Wipro or any of his other peers did. So for that, I think you'll have to give him credit. But then if you're a CEO, you'll also have to manage lots of other things. You'll have to manage the board. You'll have to manage the co-founders. You'll have to become an Infosion and be there with the people. Maybe he didn't do a lot of that. But I think in terms of that overall technology vision and the change the kind of changes that the company had to do, I think he got that. And that is what this thing highlights. So what now for Infosys, right? I mean, that's the thing, because this
no,
is over.
No future CTO should apply, is it?
I don't know. I mean, as one of our columnists has said, but what, because it's now gone.
Hmm.
But what has this done? It means, one, Vishal Sikka is out. Two, I also think this weakens Mr. Murthy's position significantly, right? I mean, he's also likely to be a lot more cautious about his interaction with the company.
True.
The company's response today has been pretty harsh. I mean, I've seen them using some of the harshest language I've ever seen any company use against a promoter group.
Mm.
They've been very harsh. I have a feeling that the door is shut on them, right? So which means whoever now emerges as CEO, maybe they'll choose to have an executive chairman who calls the shots.
Yeah.
I don't know. But that person has to now manage everything else, which we discussed, but also address the technological challenges and other things.
So moving on, we look at the next story, which is the Gorakhpur tragedy, where 70 children have died allegedly due to lack of oxygen supply being cut off. Some say it's due to encephalitis. The government has sort of washed its hands off. There's nobody taking responsibility.
I don't think it's fair to say that the government has washed its hands off, right? I mean, it's not a fair thing to say. But there are issues, right? And again, I think it's important to step back. First of all, let me say this, and I think it's important to say this. Children dying because of a public health crisis is the worst thing that can happen anywhere in the world, right? I mean, so let's not make any bones about that. It means we have failed our future.
Mm.
That's what we've done. And I think that's a big issue. But there are various theories during the rounds. I don't want to go into these things. I think if you look at infant mortality in Uttar Pradesh, it's high, much higher than the national average, right? I mean, I think it's around 78 or 75 or in that region per 1,000 live births. National average is in the 40s, I think.
Right.
So significantly higher. So it's always had a problem. And there are a variety of reasons why this problem happens. Huge state, very poor public health care.
Right.
I'm told that around 40% of the births that happen at homes, right?
True.
And then the children are transported and everything else. A lot of births are premature. And then premature children need that ventilator support, need that oxygen support and things like that. This particular incident comes in the back of several such incidents that have happened over a period of time. I think there is a broader issue of a lack of understanding of what causes deaths in those areas, right? I mean, some people are blaming encephalitis, Japanese encephalitis, which is a form of acute encephalitis syndrome, broadly categorized as that, and which is a viral infection. And it is true that in the past, there have been a lot of deaths that have happened on account of that. But there is also the scientific theory that these deaths are on account of a bacterial infection called the scrub typhus.
Right.
And not really this. We don't know, but we have to find out. We can't wait for another crisis to happen. And that's what I'd like to see happening, right? As important as it is to see whether there was an oxygen failure and everything else and to correct that and to remedy that. And the important thing to realize here is that government procurement of essential medicines or things that you need in hospitals like oxygen has always been bad,
right?
And you have to evolve a new benchmark for that. You'll have to look at what needs to be done. But keep that aside and keep the investigation aside as to what went wrong. Get it done.
Mm.
And if you find that there's one person who can be blamed for it, chop off his head. Right? I mean, I have no issues. But that's aside. I don't think we should be spending time on that.
Mm.
We should be instead spending time on what's the cause of these deaths.
Mm.
If it's happening because of a public health failure on account of either lack of enough doctors, enough facilities where children can be born, if it's happening on account of scrub typhus and things like that, so you have to find out. And those are the kind of directions in which I'd like to see us looking. Not, you know, someone is trying to cover up, someone is trying to point fingers. All those things are immaterial and irrelevant.
Moving on, there's hardly been any rain this monsoon, and according to the IMD data, the entire country is deficient in rainfall by at least 23%.
Not the entire country. Okay, so let's again, you know, we'll have to be very clear about this. It did rain heavily in June and in July. It rained quite heavily in July, but in August things have been a little dull. And what's happened is there are around 9 regions because IMD maps rainfall across regions, and these regions are, you know, Haryana, Delhi, Rajasthan, yeah, parts of the south, some parts of Maharashtra, some parts of Uttar Pradesh, some parts of Madhya Pradesh, where rains are deficient. Deficit means plus 20 to minus 20% of the long period average, which is a 50-year average, is normal. If it goes below minus 20%, more than 20% less, it's deficient. And I think these nine regions right now are deficient. It could change. If you get rains, a minus 23% could become a minus 18% and it'll become normal. Right. But what's happened in this process is, I think some of the sowing has been affected and some of the crops have been affected, because after planting, they obviously need water and things like that. It's not really going to affect things like agricultural productivity, because overall agricultural productivity was great last year. This year, again, the estimates say that it'll be good. But it's affected some farmers. And in a year when there's already significant farm distress, largely on account on poor offtake by traders, I think it's not a great thing. We've seen what's happened in the course of the year.
Right.
Farmers across the country have protested. They've all wanted loan waivers and other things, which again is because deep in debt, agriculture is not really being remunerative. A bad monsoon is the last thing that you need at this time. Because also, in India, the monsoon has a lot of other impact, right? I mean, if you speak to stock market analysts, or if you speak to the CEO of consumer durable companies, a good monsoon is one of those things that they'll always argue will result in better performance of stocks, better performance of their consumer products, higher sales and things like that. And that could be affected to some extent, right? I mean, it's still not severe, but it could be affected to some extent. Of course, in some parts of the country, like the south, some parts of Karnataka, some parts of Tamil Nadu, it's really quite bad. But overall, it's cause for concern, not cause for alarm. And we'll know whether it's cause for alarm a week from now, because this data is updated on a daily basis by the India Meteorological Office.
So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. The Editor's Podcast is also available on iTunes and audioboom.com. Please click on the subscribe button on iTunes to get weekly updates of latest episodes. Thank you for listening, and see you next Friday.